This is Will's Band of the Week for August 31st, 2014. Welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett, live in studio.
Here I am.
And Chris from an undisclosed remote location.
Hey, but I'm not next to my furnace tonight, though.
And you almost made it here. Chris almost made it live in studio, and then for undisclosed reasons, he needed to revert to his undisclosed remote location.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I had 1 foot out the door, and then circumstances intervened, and I had to stay to watch the small people that look like me.
Yeah,
get them into bed.
Probably a good idea not to just leave them alone. At this age, my kids, they love it when I leave them alone. It's like, when they get to be teenagers, they're like, Dad, it's great. They'll say stuff like, hey, Dad, when are you leaving? It's like a wishful thing. It's like, could you please leave pretty soon? It's going to be great as soon as you're gone. Yeah. All right. Well,
that's
it's good.
Sad.
It's good.
That's
even sad. Even though Chris is not here in person, it's good to have the Gang of Three back again.
His voice is here, you know, and the listeners can kind of imagine him being here.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
I'm going to
imagine that he's behind this. He's behind this door over here.
Yeah.
In the studio.
Look what happened to our sign, our podcast in session, Do Not Disturb.
Oh,
it's kind of getting tattered.
Yeah.
But it looks pretty punk rock, though, now.
It kind of does.
It does.
It really does, actually.
Yeah. Is that going to be in the Podcasting Hall of Fame? That's a pretty good artifact for
that.
Yeah.
It seems like it's turning a little yellow, too.
Yeah.
I should probably take a photo of that. That would be a good thing to put up somewhere. Yeah, I'm going to do it. I'll take a photo of that. Okay, let's see. Music news. What was the story I was telling? Oh, yeah. Before we started recording, I was about to tell you guys that two of my friends went to see a band called The Baseball Project. And it's a band that has only songs about baseball. And Mike Mills from REM is in the band. Apparently, Peter Buck is like sometimes in it, too. But this time, it was Mike Mills and some other people who are not Mike Mills. And they played at that basement place, Kiki's House of Righteous Music.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my friends got her photo taken with Mike Mills, and she seemed extremely thrilled. So that was cool.
That's cool.
As thrilled as I would have been?
Not quite as thrilled as you would have been, Chris. You would have had like a goofy look on your face because you wouldn't be able to conceal your thrill.
I touched Mike Mills on his hand at a concert. I was in the front row.
Man, that's kind of un-Barrett like to be in the front row.
Yeah. Well, this was in 1985.
So
I was a different guy back then.
Yeah. You're really boisterous back then.
But, yeah.
Hmm.
So I'm kind of famous in that small way. And JJ actually interviewed him for the Badger Herald. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So we're kind of a big deal.
He seems like he'd be a decent guy. You just get that. You get a vibe from him that he's not like a pretentious guy or anything.
Yeah.
Don't you?
You do.
What did JJ
Peter think? Buck, on the other hand, I think he's known to be kind of a dick, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's the reputation.
I mean, if I were guessing just on the impression, I would peg Mills as being the nicer guy.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know enough about him. Haven't met them.
All right, if you could spend, you know, to go out for a beer with each of the REM members, how would you rank them? Like, number one, I'd have to say, you know, Stipe, obviously.
Because he's
Mike Stipe.
The thing is, you don't know much about Bill Berry.
No.
Everybody seems to like him.
Seems like a nice guy.
But you'd have to go Stipe, Mills, Buck, Berry, right? In that order?
I guess.
Although Peter Buck is, you know, if he's not a jerk, he'd be pretty interesting, right?
Yeah. I guess my the premise of this is that you strip away all the musical things about it and just think about their personality. In which case, then I'm putting Mike Mills first.
I feel like Michael Stipe would actually be a pretty challenging dinner guest.
Yeah.
Like, he'd stare into your soul and start talking about in, like, haikus and only using words that begin with B and stuff. And, like, you'd have no idea what's going on. And you'd look like the idiot.
No matter what you ordered, too, he'd have a problem with it.
He might.
I'd get like the foie gras and he'd get all mad at me and a veal schnitzel.
The thing is, though, you don't really know if he would be that way. You know, who would be for sure would be Morrissey, right? I mean, he would just be impossible, right? Because he wouldn't be able to conceal. He wouldn't be able to just be like laid back. Whereas I think that maybe Stipe would be able to just kind of be easygoing, even though he has strong opinions on this stuff. I don't know.
Right. But I think Morrissey, if he's recording and stuff, he won't even allow anybody to have hamburgers like in the building. You know what I mean? He's really, really very strict. Here, I'm pushing the dog out here.
Dog's getting kicked out for misconduct.
I thought that was the ghost of Morrissey complaining about it.
Yeah. All right. Would you like to speculate on any other rock and roll dinner guests? I'll tell you, I don't want Steven Tyler
over. No, I don't
over.
Want him at all.
That would be really bad.
I believe there was one podcast where I actually did a Steven Tyler impersonation.
Yeah, I think you did. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
You're right.
It had a whoop buddy but dot 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 or something like that in there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gosh, that would just be so fatiguing.
Every sentence, and every sentence would have an exclamation point on it. Like the book I was reading that had all caps and exclamation points.
I'd like to be editing that thing. Send it back. It's all... all marked up.
Yeah, he'd probably
every change on there. Nah, that's how I want it.
He'd say, he'd be saying you need to add more all caps and exclamation points. There aren't enough in here. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sort of music news type thing. I watched a little music documentary. There's a Pitchfork documentary about the making of The Soft Bulletin by the Flaming Lips.
There is. Like, where did you see
it's
that?
It's like 45 minutes long, and it's like a Pitchfork produced thing from like 2 years ago. I can't remember where I saw it, and so I watched it. It's on YouTube, and I got it through Apple TV, so you know I saw it on the big screen. You know, well, the medium-sized screen. The bigger than a computer screen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good. Very good. It will reiterate or remind you of how good that album is.
Yeah. I've been hearing
it's
that
a great
a ton
album
because Wilson just started playing it constantly. So is it appropriate for a 13-year-old, or is he going to learn too much about drugs and stuff?
He'll only learn the one story about the spider bite song, that the spider bite wasn't actually a spider bite.
Mm.
So, but it's not overdone, and it's not done in a way that like glorifies it.
Okay.
Well, the other drug thing is that the cover of the album came from a magazine article about people taking LSD that Wayne Coyne had. And there's like this photo of these two people, and he thinks it's really cool. And they show how it got transformed into the album cover.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think, I think it'd be okay to have Wilson watch it.
Yeah.
And it's cool.
All right.
Enjoyable 45 minutes. And then it made me think, if there's a free YouTube video documentary this good from Pitchfork, maybe there's a bunch of other Pitchfork documentaries. Well, there kind of are, but not that much that made me want to watch them. So there's one with Grant in it, though. There's a video from the Pitchfork Music Festival of Speedy Ortiz. And it Grant is in it for like one full second. It like zeroes in on him in the crowd.
Yeah, didn't you say you guys were up front for that?
Yep. Yep. They avoided me wisely, but they got Grant in it. So they wouldn't want to admit there was a guy as old as me watching him and make him uncool, right?
As soon as the camera was on you, you did your ice bucket challenge?
Yeah. I think you probably beat me in the ice bucket thing, Chris, you know, because you had a whole big storyline thing, and that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I wasn't
going to put a little effort into it.
I wasn't going to do it, and then a friend of mine said, you know, one of my best friends, he's like, you know, I challenge you, and I'm like, all right. This could actually be maybe a little bit fun, so what the hell? And Grant did he dumped it just right perfectly on my head.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't one of those wimpy things. You know, some people, they take like a tiny little, like, you know, 8-ounce container and the little tiny thing goes on their head. Come on, you know, do a real bucket.
Right.
And Chris, you had like your kids each did one, right? So that was legit.
Oh, yeah.
That was legit. That was like a solid amount of water.
Absolutely was. And my shirt was freezing, and it didn't stop me being freezing after I stood up.
Well, I did it when it was like, it was like really, really hot outside, and I just finished a run. I'm like, this is the perfect time because this feels good. So, yep. All right. Enough of that. That's the music news. You guys got any music news? Anything happen Any deaths? Any music experiences? I heard "Do It Clean" by Echo and the Bunnymen in Trader Joe's today.
Oh,
is that
man.
Music news?
That is music news. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of sad.
Yeah.
they didn't report in Pitchfork about that?
No, there's no report.
You heard that song? Okay.
Yeah, okay, that's it. That's all I've got. Let's have Chris tell us about the new Ty Segall album. We're cutting edge. It just came out as we're recording this. We're recording a little bit early this week. It came out like a day or two ago.
Absolutely.
And I've been wanting to listen to it, but Chris got out ahead of me on this one. So, but he seems to have formed some opinions, and I think we should go ahead and listen to some of it. Chris should tell us about it. It's called Manipulator.
Yes. It is actually, I believe, he's in his mid-20s, and I believe this is actually his 8th album now.
He's like prolific.
He's been doing, easily an album a year. And what's kind of amazing is that I think he kind of keeps getting better. So he's definitely not out of ideas. And that doesn't even count like the little side projects that he's done with other people. I think he's on Michael Cronin's albums as well. He's one of his buddies in one of the albums I liked a lot last year. So, this came out and NPR kind of teased it almost a month ago, saying, "Well, this is coming out." And then they did the what they call the early listen or the first listen. And I've been listening to it pretty much nonstop on that, which probably isn't their idea of what it should be for. But it's, I'm going to buy it now. So maybe it does serve its intended purpose. So I think you should either buy it or dump a bucket of ice water on your head. I think that should be the new
Ty
challenge.
Segall challenge.
Yes.
The Ty Segall
ice bucket challenge.
That's right.
You either have to buy the album or dump like some hot rice on your head or something.
Wow. I'm going to buy the album. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to buy it on vinyl based on 12 seconds of hearing it today.
Yeah.
It seems like it'd be a good vinyl album. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's play the first song I wanted to play, which is the 5th song. It's called Feel.
Yeah, that was okay. No, that, wow. That's, how is that not going to be huge? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, how do they keep this out of the hands of every burnout and stoner in the world? You know? Isn't this tailor-made for these people? And
right.
For others,
no.
too. I mean, for me, I love it myself. But this is just, you know, the essence of rock.
I listened to an interview with him, and he said that for his past albums, he'd go into the studio and just knock out the album in like a day or two and just, you know, play all the songs kind of fast. And if there was a mistake, he was kind of like, that's the way it was meant to sound. And it's kind of cool. So I'm just going to leave it that way. And I'm cool with that. And then for this one, he took the total opposite approach. He had the studio for like a full month and he just kept working on it with his producer and was able to, I guess, adapt to a completely different style where he just decided to be really patient and just work with stuff. And what I noticed about it is that the recording is just, the whole sound of it is more kind of a fuller, warmer sound than he had in the past. And
yeah, in the past he's had sound, kind of a fuzzy garagey type of sound, and this is a little more fleshed out.
Right. Yep. So, Chris, you got to keep him coming.
Well, yeah. I mean, I just, to me, you know, kind of on the NPR website, they say that, you know, it's kind of a shame that the kind of the summer album, the album of the summer, shows up at the end of the summer when you could have been listening to this, you know, for the last couple of months. And it totally is. It's like a, you know, a good rock summer album. And so let me pick another song. Let's see. Let's go with song 7, which is called The Clock.
We should mention that it's 17 songs, 56 minutes.
Yeah, get your money's worth.
Yep, and I guess they call it a double album because that means that on vinyl, you need two records. You can't fit it on one.
Mm-hmm.
You could fit it on one CD, right? CD holds like 75 minutes or so, isn't that right?
Right.
And, yeah, yep.
Yeah, I was surprised that it came in past 50 minutes or whatever because he's usually got pretty short songs, but... So yeah, I mean, the other night I was watching the MTV Video Music Awards, and like every act is either Beyonce or Nicki Minaj or something like that. You know, you go through these whole MTV shows without seeing a single guitar ever on stage.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of refreshing now to have, you know, it just feels right to have rock music at least out there. Somebody is still doing this stuff.
Right.
Yep.
You know, it reminds me a little bit, it doesn't sound like the Meat Puppets Up on the Sun very much at all, but it's got the same quality of being like, it's obviously fussed over quite a bit, you know, but at the same time, it sounds pretty loose, pretty slack, and like they're not trying too hard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a difficult thing to pull off without it sounding polished. I mean, it is, you could hear the little kind of orchestration.
Yeah,
weaved in there and stuff, right. And but at the same time, it sounds, you know, pretty relaxed and casual. So
I think it
that's,
is
that's quite a feat.
I think it is hard to pull that off because I tried doing it when I had my bands in the 80s, and we'd have like a garage version, like the first version we played in the basement or the garage. And then our friend got this 8-track reel-to-reel, and I was like, wow, this thing is awesome. Now we're going to sound really professional. So we meticulously tried to re-record a bunch of these songs. And like, none of them sounded as good as they did before.
Yeah.
So like, if you fuss over it too much, then there's no more... You just lose that. There's no spontaneity or whatever.
Right.
So he somehow kept the songs to the, you know, the way he wanted them and just made them sound better, I think.
Yeah.
Must have used his month in the studio wisely.
Isn't that the whole idea behind just like electronic music that's just so soulless that there's nothing human about it, that, you know, all the little glitches and all that stuff are gone?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that's why I could only get into sort of gloomy electronic music, because that gave it like feeling, you know. It's like, at least if you make it sad, then you know, there's a human element, even if it's like mechanical underneath it, you know. Yeah. All right, let's play something else. Chris, what do we got?
Oh, you want me to pick another song?
Yeah, we got 17 tracks, man. You got to go at least 3, maybe even 4.
Let's see. This is still such a new album. I'm trying to think of what the names of the songs I like are. Let's try number 14, which is called The Crawler.
He was kind of rocking there, I'd say.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is, I've picked, like, 2 kind of fuzz rock songs and then one that's a little more acoustic. There are probably about half the songs on here actually have, like, some kind of acoustic element to them. And then there are some songs where it's pretty clear. The Beatles influence is really clear. Like, he's kind of one of these guys that has the, you know, like, the John Lennon affectation in his voice when he wants to. So I was driving my daughter around yesterday listening to this, and she was like, I think they sound more like the Beatles than anybody I've heard. And she's like 10 years old. So she could even tell.
Wow. Not bad. Yeah. She's going to be a rock critic.
Indeed. She's already working on it.
Or she'll be a rocker. Has she taken up a musical instrument yet?
She's a lot like me in the fact that she wants to play guitar, but doesn't want to practice playing guitar. I think she just thinks it comes to you in a dream or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll get her working on it.
Yeah. Good. You got to do that. Got to ever do in your Husker Du cover. Did you do a Husker Du cover with your Strat?
I did.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's because it was during the during all the union stuff going on when Scott Walker said he wanted to divide and conquer Wisconsin. And so that's one of my favorite Husker Du songs, and so that I could actually play. So I played a little bit on a video, which generally if you put a video of yourself playing a song on YouTube, it really creeps people out. So,
yeah.
So I took it down.
Can I remind you and the listeners of something that you said about that back at the time?
What
you
did
might
I say
remember.
At the time?
You said at that time that if we got 100 followers on Facebook, that we were authorized to put that on the website.
But that was the one
for everybody to see.
But that was when you weren't singing on that one, right? It was the one.
Oh God!
The one.
That was a different song.
Yeah, the one he was singing on was the one he was going to put up. Was that like a Clem Snide thing or something?
I don't care what he puts up, but you've got to put something up.
We're up to like 160 or something.
You have to.
We passed 100 listener or 100 Facebook people a long time ago.
Yeah, two years ago.
That's in the rearview mirror
now.
Here's
a new challenge, Chris. I challenge you to put that video up. Or donate $500 to the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
There you go.
Okay, the challenge has been laid.
I don't recall any type of agreement with regard to any videos of
that,
me.
Wait.
He's pulling out the
I didn't
do
know
not
that
recall.
These things had to do with agreements. Let's forget that even happened.
That was just a challenge.
It did.
Yeah.
This is a challenge.
Now
falls
challenges,
outside of that.
Challenges are the thing now. So.
Yeah. That would be a real one, right? The ice bucket thing. Hey, you guys did a great job. Most people are kind of willing to do it. What if the challenge was donate money or put a video up of yourself singing a song?
Yeah.
That would be tougher.
For a lot
of
people.
That would be a little more uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, Chris.
It's the whole idea of the challenge.
That's the thing now.
All right. Are we going to leave it at that for Ty Siegel, or do you want to play one more?
I mean, I'm pretty much just picking songs at random now, so I would say let's just talk about something else. But
yeah, okay.
I would highly recommend that album.
Yeah, the listeners can sample it. And as of now, it's not on Spotify. Maybe it will eventually be on Spotify, but you have to actually shell out some cash.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Based on what I've heard, this is worthy of that.
Yeah, and you can sample the whole thing. You can go to Amazon and, you know, or iTunes and get a sample of, you know, every track and then decide if it's worthy of your purchase. But,
well,
it seems
doesn't
like a pretty
the fact
cool
that we said that it is worthy?
Oh, that's right. Wait, they don't have to make a decision for themselves.
Right. I mean,
that's right. We've already
our
decided.
Our opinion has more weight than their own opinions.
What is the whole purpose?
They're just
of this
the
podcast?
Listeners.
Right.
We're the podcasters.
Tell people what to buy.
What was I? How did I forget that?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're the authorities here.
Back in the old days, though, when they had record stores, they had a in Chicago, a Tower Records that was open till midnight.
That's pretty cool.
So you could like be in a bar and having a couple of beers and hear a song. Oh my God, I'm going to go buy that right now. You drive down there. If there was a Tower Records open until midnight right now, I would go buy that.
You'd go buy the Ty Siegel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty cool.
So that's my four thumbs up based on the random.
Wow, how many thumbs do you have?
Well, I have the two.
He was counting his big toes. Those are the other two thumbs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
there's also a song on this album
hyperbole.
Called Susie Thumb.
Yes.
So there you go.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to mention this on Music News and I forgot. According to Bonnie Sternberg, who wrote this article for Paste Magazine, the following is the best garage rock song of all time. Here we go.
I travel from Maine to Mexico.
The Sonics.
I was going to say that is the Sonics, if I recall correctly.
Have Love Will Travel.
Yeah, so, I'm not going to give that. I'm not going to say that's the best. That's not the best song by the Sonics.
Well,
the
she's got three Sonics songs in her in the top 50.
Does she have the Witch on there?
I don't know. I can't scroll that
yeah,
fast.
Yeah, that's a long list. Yeah. Well, going to give yep. her some credit.
Attempt a list like that is right. That's pretty tough to do.
There it is. So, okay, it's number 24.
Okay, let's play The Witch. Let's see if Barrett's right. See if this is better. The accompanying video is pretty funny. It's this woman who looks like Ace Frehley from Kiss in a bikini.
What?
Yeah, that's what it looks like. I'm thinking this is some kind of a fan video or something. Yes. But what do you think? Am I right? I'm right. That's better.
I don't know. I guess I can't really say that based on just those two samples. Well, but I don't really have a background with Sonics, so I probably can't give it a fair evaluation. It certainly sounded...
Love Will Travel actually made a comeback a few years ago because it was featured in the movie Rock and Rolla, which is a Guy Ritchie movie. And he's kind of like a Tarantino type of knockoff guy. And so he made a movie, and that song was featured in it. And so it was somewhat popular there for a little while.
It probably unduly influenced the writer of the article. That's what I'm going to say.
Probably. What else do we have on there?
Let's see. We've got, the Sonics song was number one, Have Love Will Travel. And then we've got The 13th Floor Elevators, You're Gonna Miss Me.
That's a good one.
The Kingsmen, Louie Louie. The Seeds, Can't Seem to Make You Mine.
That's good.
Stooges, I Want to Be Your Dog.
The Stooges, is that's not garage rock.
It's not?
No, they were on a major label. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
That's a major
96
label
Tears.
Release.
That's not really garage rock either, is it? Question mark so. And the Mysterians.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Count Five, Psychotic Reaction. A lot of 60s stuff, you know, Wild Thing. And then she gets into some, like, she puts Fell in Love with a Girl by the White Stripes at number 12, which I do think that's a really great song.
Yeah, that was on White Blood Cells, though, which was.
Yep.
I mean, they were out of garages at that point. I mean, is the idea that these were recorded like in lo-fi garage settings? Or, I mean, I obviously understand garage rock doesn't have to be recorded in a garage, but.
Yeah, I think it's like, sort of like the idea of it's sort of a genre, just kind of the overall feel of it. And that's
yeah, but
kind
I
of
think it also, I don't mean to step on your line there, but it also kind of implies a lack of professionalism.
Yeah, right. That could be.
It's like a really great artist can't be like, oh wow, outsider art is really cool now. I'm gonna paint one of those. It doesn't count. You can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's the lack of training and the, you know, in some cases kind of the unintentional awesomeness and garaginess of these things where maybe they were trying to sound better. They were trying to sound like the Beatles or the Rolling Stones, and it comes off as this kind of handmade, rough around the edges artifact rather than something that, you know, I saw they have the Strokes on there. Like that, I don't know. That's not garage rock to me.
You know, that I didn't realize how great my tie-in here was. Number 26 on the list, Ty Segall.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a song called Girlfriend.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a little lower fi, for sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. See, but that's Barrett was kind of helping me make my point, which was, is there a point where a band becomes like so proficient that they are ineligible to create garage rock anymore?
Yeah, I mean, like, people, I guess it's a useful term to describe what it sounds like to people, but it's, you know,
yeah,
it's inauthentic, if that even matters.
You know, I did it's garage authentic. Rock. Yeah. I actually did garage rock.
You did garage yeah. rock.
It wasn't.
But you were playing like.
It was literally garage rock.
Right.
We recorded stuff in my parents' garage.
Wow.
So it really sounds garagey, but not good enough for anybody else to listen to, mm-hmm. unfortunately. But who cares? We got to listen to it. That's a great rock and roll thing. People should do this. Just record music and just play it. And who cares if anybody else wants to listen to it?
Yeah.
You made the damn recording. One of the most fun things is just make a recording and listen to it in your car yourself. And say, hey, I played that. I did that. That's fun.
Yeah. I've done that with my iPhone on using like the whatever, like, you know, the voice memos.
Yeah.
And you got to really be careful to erase that lest a 13-year-old comes across it.
You did like a Vegas crooner thing or something, like a sang like a Tony Bennett song.
I don't
or
even
something.
Remember. I've done a bunch of different things, and then I'll always erase them.
Yeah,
I just
that's fun though.
I have no idea what I sound like.
Yeah, that's fun to do though. People should do that for sure.
Yeah, it's fun. But I think the greatest garage rock song, is a song called "Index" by what's his face.
I think the greatest garage song of all time is called "In the Garage" by Weezer. Which is actually about being in the garage with his poster of Ace Frehley.
By Felt is who I'm thinking of.
Felt has a song called Index?
Yeah, the first song he ever did.
Okay, here it is. Let's see if Barrett's right. Does it do anything else?
Nope, that's it.
Just it's 4 minutes 11 seconds.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So there you go.
It takes a little bit of it's a little daring to like release that, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it was just like something he did on a cassette, and then later after he'd done some albums, it's like, here's my first song. You know,
I mean, that's as bad as like Bob Pollard releasing his suitcase full of cassettes. It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah,
he had a thing called Suitcase, and he had like 100 songs on it, and he just took all the old cassettes that he had put like little demos on, and they're all just kind of ridiculous, actually.
But I mean, wouldn't it at least be kind of interesting to listen to that and sort of see?
It is if you're really
like where he gets the ideas.
If you're patient, you know, track 71 out of the 100 has like a chorus from some other song that became a recorded song for the band, you know.
So,
but it's like
it's
a
like
lot
be
to
nice, really cool to listen to once.
Exactly, that's about right. Yeah. Yep. Okay, this is "In the Garage" by Weezer.
Yeah.
Listeners, you're not going to believe what Will is going to subject us to, but I'm looking at his computer, and I know what's going to happen. Brace yourselves, everybody.
Are you ready? You know, Weezer, they had that wall of guitar thing going, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, I just like that song because I think it just kind of, it really does capture the idea of just kind of going away into the garage where all the stuff is yours and, you know, you can kind of be by yourself.
Yeah.
Which I kind of like.
It's total rock and roll. So yeah, so now we have an Ace Frehley theme going.
Yes.
So then
two references.
And I remembered that he just put out a new album, so let's see if it's any good. Here's the title track called Space Invader.
We don't usually talk over the music, but holy shit, right? That's terrible.
Oh, man. You know, I was reading something about this, and it's so funny because, you know, I as a teenager, I loved Kiss so much. I thought they were so cool. And, you know, the explosions, they were just super cool. Ridiculous cheesy lyrics, you know, and we just laughed like crazy and watched the explosions and, you know, had fun. And I thought it was really cool. But it's really funny now that people, they're so nostalgic and they want to say like Ace Frehley was the greatest guitar player. You know, objectively, Ace Frehley was not that good of a guitar player. I mean, all of his solos were like really super standard stuff. Just the thing, you know. And on, like, I was reading this book on the Destroyer album, he didn't even play on it because he was so strung out on drugs, like, he just didn't show up at the studio, so they just had another person record him.
Wow.
You know, the guy's just not that good at all.
That was,
but,
like,
you know,
me at the year-end podcast in 2012.
What was that? Oh, right, exactly. That's right.
So
that's what,
strung out on scotch.
Well, that's why we had another, like, a guy that has a voice just like Barrett's actually was recording those parts. And he was pretty convincing, wasn't he?
Yes, that other Barrett guy. Impersonator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
It's a lucrative job.
So I'm sorry, Ace, I was entertained by you as a teenager, but let's face it, you got extremely lucky to get in on a huge cash-making machine operated by Gene Simmons. And, you know.
Started talking about like the world being in trouble. I thought he was like headed towards some kind of ecological theme or something, but no. I'm not even sure. Is that
you know, like thematically and lyrically, fine. I'm fine with, but the music, it's just like so generic and lame.
Yeah, and
oh my God,
his singing is kind of like half talking and half singing, and you know, if you're sort of nostalgic for those old Kiss albums where they'd put like one or two Ace songs and they seemed kind of cool just because they just put one or two of them on there, you know, and you know his voice sounds the same, so I could see it being kind of fun for people, but yeah, all right, now I'm in trouble, right? Gene Simmons will get mad at me, yeah, except he doesn't like Ace anymore. Ace is out of favor with Gene. I got kind of a garage rocky thing. There's this band called Connections. I think I talked about them like a couple of years ago. They're kind of just, you know, they're kind of lo-fi power pop. They're kind of good. They just came out with another album. It's called Into Sixes. So here, let's play a song. It's called Apartment by the Interstate.
If I leave it soon, I'm only miles away. Got an apartment near the interstate. It's loud and dry. Kiss your family even though they're fake. Had no connection but I hear that. I'm lost and dry.
Okay, is that garage rock? It's kind of garage rock, isn't it?
I don't even know anymore.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's kind of lo-fi.
Yeah.
Let's try another one. Connections. This is called Beat the Sky. There's some lo-fi power pop for you. Mm-hmm. Connections.
Yeah. It kind of sounds like if Bob Mould wasn't old and if you were young but making the music that he makes now, it would kind of sound like that.
Yeah,
a little like poppier than like the standard Husker Du, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, I'm going to go see Bob Mould in a couple weeks. I'll report on that. Yeah.
Nice.
Yes. I like his latest incarnation, his last couple albums I really like a lot, and he's got a good band playing with him now. He's got John Worster. Isn't he the Superchunk guy?
Yeah.
On drums.
And the guy named Jason, Philly Boy Roy guy, too.
Jason Narduzzi.
I don't know who that is.
On
but...
bass. Hmm. Yeah.
I watched the movie. He did the solo thing at the NPR Tiny Desk concert thing, and I watched that. That was pretty good. Enjoyed it quite a bit.
Did he do the solo electric thing?
Yes.
Yeah, my wife and I saw him do that.
Oh, I thought you meant John Worster. I'm like, wow. What?
Just vocals and drums, right? We saw Bob Mould in, it must have been like, you know, the mid-90s, you know, 96, 97 or something. And it was a live thing with, and he just did the solo thing with a loud, distorted electric guitar. It was kind of cool. I'd never seen anybody do that. You don't see that very often, right? The solo guy is usually with an acoustic.
Yes.
He did it with a rockin' guitar, and it was pretty good, pretty effective. So, but I am interested to see him with a bass and drums band. That'll be fun.
Yeah, every couple of years he says he's done with the full band rock thing, and then 4 years passes and he gets sick of doing acoustic and he goes right back to it. So
right.
I believe one of his albums was called like The Last Dog and Pony Show.
Right. Yep.
When he announced at that point that he was done with, like, you know, making music as a band.
Right.
But that was 15 years ago and here he is back at it.
Yeah, he's done some DJing and also some sort of more electronic type stuff. And then now he's back the last couple albums to the just total rock and roll.
Yep.
You know what I really like, and you mentioned a little bit, is the electric guitar and singing. Like, just that, like Billy Bragg used to do.
Yeah.
Who's doing that today? Anybody? I can't think of anybody that's noteworthy that does that. But,
yeah,
you know, it was like mid-period Billy Bragg or kind of early Billy Braggs.
Billy Bragg and Bob Mould.
Tax Man about poetry and workers' playtime. Classics.
So, Barrett.
Do you know those records, Chris?
No, I mean, I dabbled in
kind
Billy
of
Bragg
like
a
little,
bit,
a little familiar-ish, but
I dabble a little, yeah. And then I listened more to that the one they did with Wilco that he did with Wilco.
Yeah,
and that was pretty good, I thought.
Yeah.
So Barrett, what have you been listening to these days?
Oh, all kinds of things.
Let's
kind of
play
embarrassing
them all.
Things to admit.
If we played them all, it'd take the podcast
it
would be
take
2 hours
long.
Yeah, but we got to like play a couple things.
Well, kind of started off. I was listening to Graham Parsons and in his country stuff with the Birds and Flying Burrito Brothers and stuff, and I thought, wow, this is just so awesome. And I'm playing it for JJ and thinking, telling her, like, can you imagine, you know, this is in the late 60s. What could be less cool than hippies listening to country music at that time? And yet Graham Parsons was doing it. And, you know, now we have basically alt country and things like that as a result. So pretty much, you know, Graham Parsons was pioneering that sound. And then you had like the Eagles and Poco and Pure Prairie League and whatever, all these 70s things that he also spawned. But then I was thinking, did he just make this stuff up? Like, is this wholly original? Like, here's this guy with these this hippie band, and they're just making this completely original music? That didn't seem right to me. So did a little research and stuff, and it led me to a couple of his influences, which surprised me a little bit. They were Merle Haggard and Buck Owens. I'm like, okay, I'll listen to those. And started to really get into it, you know? And so I told Chris about one of the songs. It's a Buck Owens song. I don't even know what year it's from. But it's called It Takes People Like You. And it's got kind of a Wes Anderson soundtrack feel to it. So let's play that.
It takes people like you to make people like me. From the great Rocky Mountains to the shores of the sea. From the sands of the desert to the tall oak tree. It takes people like you to make people like me. Though skies may turn gray for a while, you can't brighten each day with a smile. And wherever you go, I want you to know, it takes people like you to make people like me. It takes people like you to make people like me. From the snows of Alaska down to sunny Tennessee. And from New York City to Los Angeles. It takes people like you to make people like me. Those skies may turn gray for a while. You can brighten each day with a smile.
So, yeah, so there's that. And then his most well-known song would be Act Naturally, which was covered by the Beatles. So anybody that gets covered by the Beatles is kind of doing something right, you know. So,
quickly a couple of observations. First of all, a few years ago, my buddy Barry Lenzer turned me on to the Byrds' Sweetheart of the Rodeo.
Awesome.
From 1968, which is fantastic. So if you can get your hands on that, definitely listen to that. It is on Spotify. And I was listening at your request, listening to some Buck Owens today, and it's kind of funny. If I have this right, he started in like the maybe late 40s and then into the 50s. And just if you listen to kind of a compilation of his work, you can kind of tell what music was popular at the time just based on kind of like what he was doing. Because you know, there's some folk in there, and then he kind of moves into that, and then like clearly he was making music during the Elvis period, because he's got this song called Rhythm and Booze, Booze, which is, I mean, it's just an Elvis outtake. It's straight off the rack, something Elvis would have done. So I'm sure, like, you know, here you have this well-established country singer, and then Elvis comes along, and he's like, oh, crap, now I got to do, like, Elvis songs. And so I would recommend, if you could find that song, Rhythm and Booze, play that.
I found it.
Found it.
It's from a compilation called Countrypolitan Classics. Buck Owens. Rhythm and Booze. And the dog is despondent. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'd be sleeping on a soft feather bed, but there's just some things that a man can't be told, and it's me for a woman. I just got to be sure.
Yeah, that's a little unfortunate, but one thing it does is, you know, when you hear people talk about you know, the origins of rock music, they're like, well, you know, it's really just kind of the blues, you know, that's what influenced it. But country music was as influential, you know. It, there's an equal measure of country music and then folk music too in the early rock sound as there is the blues. So, and that kind of illustrates it there. Although I'm not saying that's a real great example of, you know, I really like that song all that much, but
it does sound like Elvis.
Yeah.
And then you think about how you know, it started where these styles were. You could see how they were roots of what became rock music later. But then it's interesting, isn't it, to see how it sort of diverged into Garth Brooks and Metallica. You know what I mean? It's like like the country and the rock had a lot in common, and then they kind of just branched off in different directions.
Right.
I was trying to think of another example where an established artist like that puts out an album or kind of changes their sound so obviously in, you know, as a response to a trend that's going on at the time. And the one that I just came up with off the top of my head is, you know, like in the early 90s, you get the grunge scene, and then suddenly you get an album from REM, like Monster.
Yep.
Which is so clearly influenced by, you know, the grunge era and the hard rock era, and probably not one of their better albums either. So
no. Yeah, the same thing with, who did the album Sea Monsters? That was...
That's The Wedding Present.
The Wedding Present. That's like a grunge album.
It's good, though. You didn't like it?
No, it's not.
Well, there's a couple really great songs on it. Maybe not the whole thing.
I don't like it.
Yeah. Hmm. You know, but, I always used to say this, and it may not be true, even though most of what I say is true. Wouldn't you say? Wouldn't you agree?
Okay.
If Jimi Hendrix hadn't died, there would have been a Hendrix disco album.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, didn't...
In, like, 1980, they would have been, like, Hendrix with a super disco beat kind of thing.
I'm sure you're right. And
so whatever happened to the Eagles after they broke up would have happened to Hendrix?
It might have. I mean, he would have done like
Glenn Frey making disco songs, essentially.
And like the Boys of Summer and what's the kick 'em when they're up, kick 'em when you're down? That Dirty Laundry.
Oh, God.
Well, maybe Hendrix wouldn't have been that bad. Who knows?
No reason to think that he wouldn't have been, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, what if Elvis Presley had died before he went into the army? Can you imagine his reputation? You know?
What would...
people would say, oh, there's no way, no way he would have become some cheesy, you know, Vegas-y singer like Bobby Darin or something. No way. It wouldn't have happened. But it did, you know? Even way, way, way worse. So you just don't know. Who knows what Kurt Cobain would have done?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, they'd probably, if they stayed together, they'd be like Pearl Jam. Like, who cares?
The only thing you can speculate is they'd be like anymore. Really, really like Foo Fighters, right?
Yeah.
Who knows?
But yeah.
We would have had the Kurt Cobain electronic album
yeah.
somewhere in the line.
Well, if he had stayed longer with Courtney Love, it would have been a disaster. So
yeah.
We know that much, right? We like trashing Courtney Love on the podcast.
No, but it's always my role to stick up for, but I don't feel like it right now.
All right. I'd love to hear more about what Barrett's been listening to, but we're like well over an hour now. So
we are.
We got to save something for next week.
I'll save my other country stuff. I've been listening to a little bit of mid-period Grandpa Jones, and that's some pretty good stuff. Pretty good banjo and dulcimer music. No, I'm kidding. I actually made that little gag on the instant message with Chris today in it, but I effed up the spelling of Grandpa.
And I immediately logged off, so I didn't have to see his misspellings anymore.
I think I spelled it Grandpa, like I'm a
an
idiot.
That's inexcusable.
But,
all right, I think we've given the listeners their $0 worth this week, haven't we?
For sure.
We have. How about a quick Brewers update, Chris? What's the score?
0-0 in the seventh.
Wow. What happened when they had runners at second and third with one out
apparently
and they didn't score?
Apparently they did not score. That
they
means...
was Mark Reynolds and... he was one of the guys. I'm sure he struck out and then...
you know what that's a lack of? It's a lack of taking advantage of your opportunities.
It is, yeah.
I mean, you've got to do that.
Actually, right. It was Carlos Gomez that struck out and then I forget what happened after that.
Oh, wow. That's really surprising.
And
did
striking out...
Did his helmet fall off?
When you strike out...
Giovanni Gallardo had first and third with no outs, though, and pitched out of it. So there's...
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it's been on both sides.
You know, striking out is another... It's a fundamental error.
It is.
Because you've got to make contact with the baseball.
Right.
And if you strike out, you're not doing that.
It is literally impossible to hit a home run.
Thank you, Bill James.
Yeah.
If you don't get... wood on the ball.
You've got to make contact with the ball.
The only way
Come
to hit
on.
A home run is to get the bat on
oh,
the ball.
God, I can't believe they don't understand that. All right. That's enough. We'll talk to you again next week, won't we? Well, I don't know if we'll draft Chris or not, but we always try. Sometimes we entice Chris. It's like,
I'm tough.
It's called podcast enticement. And we
tough
will.
Get.
Yes. We will talk to you again in one form or another next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast using iTunes or any other podcast app. All of our podcasts are also available directly on our webpage, willsband.net. You can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on Twitter @WillsBand. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.